What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Kill Shot DFS Army's MMA DraftKings Breakdown Podcast. Today, we're taking a look at UFC Fight Night, Gane versus Spivak. I've got the Monk Matician here with me himself to break it all down. We're going to look at the numbers. We're going to look at the odds. We're going to look at all the good stuff and try to figure out what to make of this crazy card that's happening in France with some neophyte newbies that no one has ever seen before in the UFC. So this should be an interesting breakdown. But Monk, we still got another mega mini bag. I still got another couple weeks till football. So let's fill up another weekend with some action.
Yeah, we'll take it. I'm glad. I'd rather have these fights than no fights, that's for sure. But yeah, the prelims leave a lot to be desired. But I think we get a little bit better up the main card. But still, you know, I'd still like to have rather have these fights than no fights. I got to try to keep that perspective.
I have a strong take on this main event, so I'm excited. I have some strong takes on some of these early or some of these main card fights, and then we'll get into the prelims and see how that goes. But it starts with the main event. France's the hope of a nation, Cyril Gane. He's taken on Sergey Spivak, who has graduated from milk bag status to now serious competitor at heavyweight. You know, Monk, at one point I used to call Spivak the milk bag.
Very appropriate.
And it looked like a bag of milk.
Right? A very scary bag of milk.
Yeah, well, now he's a scary bag of milk. Before, he was just a soft, cuddly bag of milk. So things have changed for Spivak, maybe. Let's take a look at the fight. Ends inside the distance. It's a strong minus 350 here. So we get five rounds of striker versus grappler, Monk, and here's my take on this. I've already got a bet, and I'm seeing the line is moving, interestingly, for Gane. It went as low. Like, quite a bit of money came in on Sergey Spivak. And here's why I think that's happened, right? Everybody saw John Jones take down Cyril Gane and submit him very easily. We also saw Francis Ngannou take this guy down a couple times and submit him. But I would argue, okay, I'm going to make an argument here that the reason that Francis Ngannou was able to take him down is because when you're fighting Francis Ngannou, you are kind of so scared of getting punched that the last thing you're thinking about is defending a takedown, right? So that's, I don't think that Cyril Gane is this horrible takedown defense guy, Monk. What I think is, hey, that was freaking Francis, and the last thing you're worried about is takedowns, right? So you're just not expecting it. And John Jones is not even just levels. He's a species above Sergey Spivak when it comes to his wrestling, his grappling, all of that. So I think at one point I got this bet in at minus 160, which it's now shifted back a little bit to minus 180. But to me, Cyril Gane is one of the strongest plays I feel like I've ever seen. I think Spivak's going to try to take him down. I think Gane's going to get back up and knock him out. Milk bag style. What do you say?
I don't know. I mean, I would agree with you there, but if Ngannou took him down once, maybe twice, but he took him down four times, and Cyril Gane had absolutely no answer for that. And we all know that Ngannou basically just learned that shit from Eric Nixick like the night before. So I don't know, man. That's a bit tough for me to see that. Pair that with the fact that Cyril Gane has only gotten 100 points or more in two of his eight DraftKings wins. He's only averaging 92.5 per win, and a ton of those have been five-round fights as well. I don't like it. His average value is just 10x. Now, the only argument I'll make to that is Spivak, when he loses, gives up a ton of points, like 108 on average across three losses. So maybe something crazy could happen. But I just don't know. And I really don't think Gane has been, I don't think you can learn enough wrestling to really stop what Spivak is at least capable of doing. I know he hasn't done it against anyone like Augusto Sakai, Derek Lewis, Greg Hardy. I mean, these guys are not these guys, but Greg Hardy, terrible fighter. Sakai's looked okay recently, but none of them are of the, of the ilk of Cyril Gane's opponents by any means. But I think Spivak still has a huge DraftKings upside, and I just can't ignore that. So I will be playing both sides of this one, but I'm going to have way more Spivak than Gane, especially at the price. And outside of a first round KO, there's no way Gon pays off this salary.
I'm just not going to agree with the no way. I agree with you that Gon is not going to have a lot of volume, but I don't see how this fight, if they're standing, I don't see the polar bear, aka the milk sack, surviving. I don't see it. He doesn't survive. He doesn't survive.
Outside of the first, though. I'm saying if he gets KO'd in the first, that'll be a good score for Gon. But if he doesn't KO him in the first, I don't know how he's going to do much.
I feel like a second round finish will get you there, too. You know, your strikes landed. There's a knockdown along the way. He's only 8,600. Or 8,700. We're not paying 95. So we need about 195 to 100 fantasy points out of Cyril here in a main event. I will have a lot of Cyril, and maybe partially because these other fights are so unattractive that this fight being super likely to end inside a distance, being five rounds, and again, my lack of belief that Spivak is actually, I think we're downgrading Spivak, but we're also probably overestimating, we're overestimating Spivak, but we're probably underestimating Cyril Gon just a little bit. Cyril Gon has real wins. And you're right, Sergey Spivak, you know, Augusto Sakai might be his best win. That's not that good of a win, Monk.
Derek Lewis for name value, but yeah.
Name value on Lewis, but I mean, I think we all went into the Lewis fight going, you know, if he takes him down, he could probably... Like, that wasn't a shocker. He was the favorite in that fight, and he did what he had to do. So, yeah, I'm going to lean Cyril Gon, but I agree with you in the sense that both of these guys, and Spivak... If Spivak wins, he's 1,000,000% locked in the nuts lineup. Like, a win for Spivak is, I put it 95% in the nuts.
Yeah, he's $1,100 under his average salary since 2021.
Yeah, he's in the nuts if he wins. Mm-hmm. But I do think Cyril Gon is going to win that fight. All right, let's move on to fight number two. Manon Fierro taking on Rose Namajunas. And Manon here is a minus 200 favorite, Monk, with the comeback on Rose at plus 170. Fight goes the distance is minus 180. So the odds makers are looking for three rounds of fight. This is a three rounder. And for this one to go to decision. Thug Rose, Monk, is one of the toughest fighters to prognosticate, and I'm going to tell you my theory as to why, and I would like your opinion on it. I think Rose sometimes just has, I think there's mental things going on there. I think she sometimes doesn't want to fight. She does. She sometimes comes super prepared, and other times she doesn't. And it's, I don't know how to predict it, but this is the same woman that was beating Zhang Wei Li not long ago. And yet here she is as a significant underdog in a fight against an opponent in Fierro, who looks good and has good statistics and has decent wins, but has not beaten, let's say, a top three person, right? She hasn't absolutely proven herself as championship material as of yet, where Rose was a champion, at least in the 115-pound division. So I'm going to, you know, I don't know what to make of this one. I think Rose is definitely a live underdog here. I think she could get takedowns. She could get taken down. I think these are similar fighters in a sense that both are really well-rounded. How do you see this one going down? I mean, I just think if Rose really wants it, she'll probably win.
Yeah, the only thing that's holding me back is we're up at women's flyweight now. We're up at 125. We've never seen that from Rose yet up until this point. So that does concern me a bit. I mean, Fiorro's going to be gigantic compared to her for sure. What is it, 5'7"? I guess Rose is 5'5".
Yeah, Rose is. I mean, Rose got to put on a little thickness.
Yeah.
You know, Fiorro is thick. I mean, she's bad. Bad.
Yeah, I don't. I will have more Namajunas than I would have thought at the beginning of the week, because her DraftKings numbers are very good, especially inside the distance. And she does have a pretty high ceiling. 6 of her 9 wins over 100 points. I do love to see that. She's also a very good scorer that's coming in well under her average salary. Also love to see that. and 12.65 average value per win is fantastic. Really good strength of schedule. The only problem, I mean, Fiore hasn't, I mean, Rose has like 13 fights in the UFC. Fiore is doing everything she can so far, exactly what she's supposed to do. You know, with, if she had 13 fights, you know, imagine where she would be. But she's beaten, you know, fantastic opponents for the women's flyweight, Chookagian, Maya, Myra Bueno Silva, who's everyone is on now, Tabitha Ricci. I mean, she's done exactly what she's supposed to do. The only problem is she doesn't always score very well. But the most interesting thing is she's gotten 30% of her DraftKings points inside the distance, and she scores 7.05 points a minute in the distance there, allowing just 1.6, controlling 87% of all the grappling time she's involved in. And I already told you who she fought: Myra Bueno Silva, Tabitha Ricci, Jennifer Maya. This woman is doing well inside the distance. So if she can negate that game from Rose Namajunas, I don't think Rose is going to have much of her. For DraftKings, I will have more Rose, like I said, than I originally thought. But I also like Min and Fiore, especially in cash games this week.
Can't argue with it at all. Like I said, I don't know which Rose shows up ever. I do think Rose, at her best, should not be a significant underdog here. But
yeah,
I don't know how you can assume that you're going to get the version. I mean, she said it. She said she's had issues motivating. And I don't think that really goes well. So it's psychology of fighting is really tricky. When you start to have to go beyond analyzing like who's got what skill, and we have to start figuring out like who cares. Yeah, that kind of stuff is really, really tough to prognosticate.
And what's going to happen to her mentally if she goes up a weight class thinking that's going to solve some problems, and then she gets smashed by Fiore? What, I mean, this could be downhill.
Yeah, I don't know. Is that her issue, that she's worried about dropping to 115? Like, I don't know what the issue is. It doesn't usually get better when you go up against bigger opponents, though.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Yeah, it's tricky. I do think that fight is one to target. 125ers is your thing. Like, you know, you got to target the fight, because those 125-pound women fights, they weirdly score really well.
Mm-hmm. It's usually a bit, you know, big mismatches for the most part, I would assume.
Yeah.
I mean, in this case, we don't necessarily have a mismatch, but we've got somebody moving up 10 pounds against somebody with fantastic hands who is probably bigger and more powerful.
Tricky one. Here's another spot where I think we have an interesting live dog, but Benoit Saint-Denis taking on Thiago Moisey. And again, kudos to the UFC. They went all out for French fighters on this one. I mean, they just went all out. All the Frenchmen are here. So Benoit Saint-Denis, you know, 11-1, has looked great. Let's take a look at the inside. He cannot be knocked out. I want to see what the inside the distance number is. But yeah, I mean, -150 to end inside the distance here, Monk. Yeah, I don't. I think that's Thiago getting knocked out, if anybody is. So
yeah.
Doesn't necessarily stand out inside the distance, this particular fight. Let's take a look at the stats. Yeah, I mean, not the greatest takedown defense here for Thiago Moisey. Benoit Saint-Denis does everything to score well on DraftKings. Like, he is your classic, I want this guy in my DraftKings lineup kind of guy. He's got takedowns. He's averaging almost four takedowns per 15, which is spectacular. And that's over a couple of fights. 1, 2, 3, 4. That's over four fights, Monk. He's averaging a solid 4+ strikes per minute. But when you combine that with those takedowns, it's really great. And you know what? Thiago, he doesn't do anything with very high volume, but he will knock you out. He has power. I don't think it's very easy to knock out Benoit Saint-Denis. I don't think I've ever seen him so much as even wobbled in a fight. How do you see this going down?
Yeah, I love the A side, Benoit Saint-Denis for DraftKings. I mean, exactly what you said. Takedowns, good striking. What against Miranda, 12.5 points a minute. That was fantastic. Put up 136 in that one. 5.5 against Stoltz, over 5 against Bonfim. The only time that he's looked not great was his debut fight against Zaleski Dos Santos, in which it should have been stopped probably in the second round. And he took the whole third round, just the beating of a lifetime. It was pretty ridiculous, actually. But he was also up at welterweight not his natural weight class. So since he's dropped down, oh, I should also mention, since he, you know, got his ass kicked in that fight for almost, you know, the entire third round plus some of the second, and even before that, still scored 42.85 points in that loss, which is a fantastic number in a losing fight when you didn't do anything hardly in the third round. So I love his scoring per minute. He since went on to drop down to lightweight and just smash everybody ridiculously. Moises is very good, obviously. His last two wins, Melky Costa, Christos Giagos, he scored over 100 points in those. You better score over 100 points if you're Thiago Moises and you're fighting Melky Costa and Christos Giagos. Those two wins included over his entire UFC career, he's still only averaging 80 points per win. And he just came off of 200-plus point wins. I mean, he scored 51 against Hernandez. Long story short, I love Benoit Saint-Denis for DraftKings, for GPPs especially. Even in cash, I don't mind him. Moises, I really can't get behind in GPPs, maybe for some cash, but he just doesn't score well enough overall. And I just don't trust, like you said, Benoit. I'd be shocked if Benoit Saint-Denis got finished. I'd also be shocked if it was a decision win for Moises that scored over 90 points.
Yeah. Moises feels fadeable here in that spot, exactly for why you said, I don't see him getting takedowns. Like, Benoit Saint-Denis has a really good takedown defense. He's a good grappler. I think Thiago Moises doesn't go aggressively for takedowns most of the time. So it's going to be tough for him to score well, even if he does figure out a way to win that fight. All right, let's move on. Fight number four, Volkan Uzdemir taking on Bogdan Guskov. And taking a look at this fight, Bogdan is a plus 155 underdog with Volkan installed as a minus 180 favorite. And here's the big number. Fight ends inside the distance, minus 400. Now, Monk, I thought of you when I was looking at this fight because the numbers will show that Volkan is not the best DraftKings scorer, right? He wins and does not score very well. I mean, yeah, 80. Here's a win against Rachik, 67. He actually finished Ilir Latifi, who no one ever does, put up a giant score in that one. I think he had some big scores early on, a couple of these early finishes. But outside of the early finishes, you know, when his fight goes to decision, it's an 80, it's a 70, it's a 67. So you have this dichotomy. But this fight is supposed to end fast. This dude, Bogdan, is a gasser. He does not have any sort of championship level experience. He has not fought anybody that you've ever heard of. There's not a, you could search. You're like, who the hell are these people? He's knocking out cans in some regional scene somewhere. But the flip side is Uzdemir looks like a fighter on the decline. Like, this is definitely not somebody that I've been looking to back with my money at all. You know, he's taken L's on the regular, the loss to Krylov, who I think Krylov is good, but it's still, you know, a rough loss. But I think all these guys he's lost to, these were real fighters that he lost to Anthony Smith when Anthony Smith was on his good run. Can't hold that too much against you. Cormier. So, you know, he has losses to good fighters and he's beating really bad fighters. But he feels like a fighter that's a bit on the decline. The upswing in his career is no longer. I'm going Volkan here, Monk. I'm going Volkan because I don't trust some guy that comes out of nowhere to beat an experienced UFC fighter. I just don't trust it. I think if Volkan can survive the first round, this Bogdan fellow will be gassed and Volkan will finish him in round two. How do you see this one going down?
Yeah, this dude Guskov is probably a fraud, so I'm going to be huge on Uzdemir this week. I can't believe he's only 8,600. This could be highway robbery in our favor, to be completely honest. Like, and yeah, Uzdemir hasn't looked, he's not my favorite fighter, hasn't looked great. I mean, his wins are decent. Rakic was up for, you know, close to a title until he just decided to stop fighting. And Paul Craig looked good since he dropped down. I mean, but Paul Craig hadn't looked good recently, but has a win over the current light heavyweight champion. In fact, the only win over the current light heavyweight champion. Uzdemir losses to Krylov, who you said is good. I agree. Ankalaev, who was the champ, I think. And then Yuri Prochazka, who's right up there, who was the former champ. So
all good losses.
Way more guys than Guskov. I don't, you know, there's no stats here. Play Vulcan Uzdemir. I guess if you think this is like a Bruno Fajeda and RoboCop situation, you could play some more of Guskov than you'd be comfortable with, but there's no way. I think Uzdemir is priced way too low, and therefore Guskov is priced way too high, and I'm not going to have much of him at all, maybe less than 10% easily in the 150 maxes. Right. And yeah, right. I'm looking to go over on Uzdemir.
Because you said it that way, I want to specify that I think this is, you have to just load up on this. So for me, I will definitely have significant exposure to Guskov, not because I think he's good at any stretch, but I just think the winner of this fight, based on the minus 400 inside the distance odds, is super, super likely to be in the nuts. And I you know, if Guskov wins, he's winning inside he's winning in round one.
Oh, this is a round one finish either way.
Yeah. So I
think it should be like 90% Uzdemir to 10% Guskov. Like, the Guskov is a fucking fraud. This guy sucks. Like, yeah, he could knock out Uzdemir with a punch. Sure. I'm not saying he can't, but
I'm agreeing with you. I'm agreeing with,
I don't know how I can go 20, 25, 30. I'd be shaking.
I'm going to have significant exposure just because you have to. I don't care. So like, it's one of those things where you got to hold your nose and play both sides of the fight. Certainly leaning Vulcan, because everything on paper says this is the experienced fighter. This is a guy who's faced real opponents, and he's kind of like going up against one of these fraud type looking fighters. But the flip side is, if Guskov comes in and just lands at the right spot and gets that first round finish, he's 100% in the nut. To me, the winner of this fight is
I don't know. He's 7,600.
You know, he's, if like he wins, he's in the most nuts.
Expensive dog on the card.
If he wins it, he's in that nuts, though. He's, you're winning know. If he wins. That's all that matters. All right. Let's move on. Next up, we've got Willie Gomez taking on Giannis Jamori. Gomez minus 210 with a comeback on Giannis. Plus 180. Do we have an inside the distance prop? Kind of. Over 2.5 rounds. And this is a new fight. It just came on. Over 2.5 rounds minus 240. So this one is looking like a decision. And Monk, I almost want to throw this to you, because I can't imagine. You probably have like personal hatred for William Gomez. Like, we don't take it personal most of the time. But a man of numbers, to look at this man's horrifically low volume output, I feel like you would hate him, just personally.
Yeah, scoring 41.9 points is pretty rough. I mean, he did score almost 80 against Aarons, but I am choosing to overlook all of this for one other number that I am in favor of, and most of you that know me should know what it is by now. It is the unnatural salary combination. So when salaries don't equal 16,200, since 2021, it's happened 25 times, and they've made the optimal lineup 21 of those 25 times for an 84%. Now I know what you're going to ask next. Well, what happens if the salary's lower or higher? Well, when it's higher than 16,200, it's 4 out of 6, 2/3 optimal. But when it's lower, as which we have in this case, I believe it's 15,300 total, 17 of 19 times optimal, guys. That is just shy of 90% optimal here. I mean, we're going against a guy in Gomori who's a newcomer, hasn't fought anyone. And say what you will about William Gomez, he's fought twice in the UFC, has 2 UFC wins. And at this point, I don't care what his score is. If his opponent is 6,900, he should be priced at 9,300, and he's $900 cheaper than that. So this is my call to action for all Gomez people, Gomez haters, whatever you want. Get this fight in your lineup. Get both sides in your lineup. 90% optimal when the salary is less than $16,200. And personally, I like Gomez here. I don't know shit about Gamora. He hasn't fought anyone. His strength of schedule is trash. So give me the guy that has 2 UFC wins to somehow get it done and pull it out here.
Such a weird fight, Monk. Such a weird fight.
Yep. I'm going to have way too much Gomez, and it's either going to pay off huge or it's going to bite me in the ass.
There is such danger in loading up on Gomez. Even at the discounted price, this guy's volume is so poor. He just stands there. I can't take it. And his volume. So he needs an 80 is not going to cut it here.
No, but if he gets a first or second round win somehow over this dude that nobody knows about, who's for some reason fighting in the UFC just because it's in his backyard, I mean, that's definitely possible.
100% possible, but the odds makers are not necessarily seeing it that way right now. So,
well, the odds makers don't have my stats.
That is true. They don't have the stats. I like what you're saying because these situations come up a lot. You have a mispriced fighter. And The first instinct a lot of time is, oh, I'm going to fade that. Now, in fairness, though, Monk, often that mispriced fighter is sub 8K. So I'd love to see those numbers rerun to where the scenario, like a lot of times we get like a 7,300 versus a 69 because it was the underdog that flips. In this case, Gomez was still favored. So you're still paying plus, you're still paying juice, even if he's priced at 8,400 instead of 91. You're still paying that juice on him. So I do think it's mildly an exception to that overall. And I think if you look back at most of those fights, though, both fighters were sub 8K. And so I think that's a little bit of that. But yeah, I mean, in order for Gomez to score enough to produce at 8,400, right? He's going to have to win with a much better score than he won against Marshall was a disaster. That's one of the that's not the lowest score in the history of a winner on DraftKings.
No,
but it's competitive with Derek Lewis's win over Ngannou for the worst score I've ever seen.
Well, nobody's got, I can't ever remember this guy's fucking name. Like 38 points, 39 points. No, it's not Lewis. Somebody scored.
Lewis was outscored by somebody, was underscored by somebody.
Yeah. I always want to say it's Munir Lazez, but that's not right. It's I'll have to look. I can't remember.
No, I'm sure I had it loaded up on that guy. And then he's gonna have to do a lot better than this, Monk. Even though with the three takedowns, he only got 80, and that is a fucking nightmare. Your guy gets three takedowns, and you're like, yep, we're doing it, and then he scores 80. That is gross. So, and all that control time and strikes and everything, and it still didn't do much. But like you said, this does prove that Gomez does have takedowns in the repertoire. And if this kid he's facing is really that terrible, and he could be coming out of the regional, this Giannis coming out of the regional sort of scene of Europe.
Yeah.
Might not have regional. Any ability to
Samurai stop fight house of Europe.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what it is. So,
well, plus, I mean, I'm just saying, if we're always saying, oh, this guy's, you know, value compared to his line is way off, you got to play him. Well, here's a guy who's $900 underpriced at this point. So, there's inherent value on that.
I will say it is a little scary that all the money is coming in on Yanni Skimori. That's concerning.
Yeah, because who the fuck is this guy? Can those people that bet on him even spell his name without looking? Like, that's what I would ask.
Probably not. I can't spell it, and I'm looking at it.
There we go.
Right now. All right, let's move on. Morgan Cherry. I should have practiced French accenting for this show.
Yeah, it's rough.
I should have gone like Morgan Cherry. I do. I have a French accent that I can do. But he's taking on Manolo Zucchini. Cherry is minus 345 with the comeback on Manolo plus 285. Ah, man, what an interesting fight. The fight ends inside the distance, minus 150. So solid but unspectacular, minus 150. Cherry is a massive favorite here at minus 345. He is one of the biggest favorites on the card. He is one of the higher priced fighters on the card. Do you think that he should be rostered? Is he worthy of this high salary level in your eyes? France versus Italy, World War II.
In cash games, yeah. I don't know how much I trust him for GPPs because I have no stats for these guys. Neither of them have ever had a UFC fight or a Dana White Contender Series fight. But the one stat I do like is that Morgan Cherry at 27 years old has 28 professional fights. This guy has more losses than most fighters his age have total fights. While Zucchini also, you know, a decent amount, 14. But Cherrier has fought in much higher competition overall, especially at Cage Warriors. Zucchini's fought absolutely nobody. So yeah, I think Morgan Charrier is the is a good cash spot this week for sure. GPPs, you're really rolling the dice. I mean, I think he gets a win here. I guess if you really like Italy or Manolo Zucchini specifically, you can throw him in your lineup, but I think Charrier should win this one. Decision or inside the distance, no idea. But yeah, I like the last pirate to get the dub.
You know, he shows a lot of losses on his record, but I just want to point out a couple things. A lot of these losses came just really at the very beginning of his career. Because when I first looked at, I don't like a guy who's losing frequently in regional scenes, right? So I saw 9 losses. I'm like, wait a second, how is this guy such a heavy favorite? But if you really, if you dive in, and I don't want to call this excuse making, but it kind of is. So he had a pile of losses really early on in his career. 2015, I think you got to throw those out. And then the more recent losses have been splits, split decision or majority decision kind of losses. So, you know, where there's a split majority decision, majority, you know, so we're looking at situations where the more recent fights, he's just losing close decisions. So they're not as egregious. Like, he's probably a little bit better than what an 18-9. Would I lay -345 on this guy? Would I pull money out of my pocket and place a bet on that? Not a chance. He's too comfortable losing. That's what it is. You get comfortable. Yep. You start losing a lot, you get used to it. You get comfortable with it. And he's comfortable losing. I don't care what anybody says. But that doesn't mean I like the Manolo here either. I think this is a pretty gross fight. Obviously, I'm going to pick Charrier to win. But I don't think I'm going to be excited about him on DraftKings at all.
No.
All right. Next up, we got Taylor Lapolis taking on Kaolan Laugren. How do you pronounce that, Monk?
I hear it's Laugren, but I don't
Laugren.
Know.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I'm down with that. Lapolis, the -170 favorite with the comeback on Laugren, +146. Again, this is another one of those late edition fights. We got a bunch of those on this card. And, you know, the card changed so many times between when I first started researching it and now that my head's spinning. I think it's Wednesday as we're recording this. And what is it? Thursday? What day is today? Thursday?
I think so.
It's Thursday as we're recording this. And who knows? Could change again. We'll see. But the under 2.5, the over 2.5 prop on this one is -200. So another fight that's leaning to go to decision. Let's take a quick look at these two fighters, get them up on screen. Taylor Lapolis was in the UFC for a while. Pretty good fighter. I don't have any issue with what I've seen out of him before. Has real wins against real opponents inside and outside of the UFC. When was he in the UFC? It was a while ago. Yeah, he
Issa had Perez, wins in the UFC. Yeah.
I don't know why he got kicked out of the UFC, to be honest with you. He kept winning. So if you look at his run, you know, he beats Ulka Sasaki, Rocky Lee in the UFC. He takes one loss, but then another win, and then he was out of the UFC. Like, this guy was just out of the UFC for no great reason. I wonder
if he's hurt, because it looks like he took a year and a half off between Issa and whoever that other guy is above him.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? It's kind of weird. Just disappeared from the UFC. A win against an older Wilson Hayes, who we remember from his time in the UFC at this point. Hey, he's only 38, so he's still floating around. So he has UFC-level wins. I went back and watched some tape of Taylor Lapolis, and the kid looks good. There was nothing that I saw that wasn't, oh yeah, he's a well-rounded fighter, seems to do it all. Laugren, again, this is one of those situations where it's tough to judge because he's fighting in Cage Warriors, but he's handling his business, getting finishes after finish, finished after finish after finish. So he did what was expected of him in these fights that he was supposed to win for the most part. Has some decent wins there. How do you see this one going down, Monk?
Well, again, I have no stats for Laugren here, so that's pretty unfortunate. His strength of schedule is okay, a little bit subpar, but what do you expect, you know, fighting on, not, you know, Cage Warriors / regional scenes? The only thing I'll say, Lapolis, not bad stats, averaged 82 points per win in his four-fight UFC run. Only one of those wins out of three put him over at 100 points. pretty low ceiling, nothing doing in the first round as far as finishes go. Did score a knockdown, and he does throw up submissions as well. Looks like he threw up, I believe, two of them. Decent strength of schedule as well. Has never been finished in his career. So automatically, I'm leaning Lopulis. Plus, he's way cheaper this week than he probably should be. Either way, whatever you think Lopulis should be priced at, Loughran is now far too high, in my opinion, 9,300. I don't know how I'm going to get to this dude. I mean, maybe a little bit in hopes of something, you know, him actually being the first person to finish Lopulis, but I don't know, man.
Who was Loughran? So Loughran
was supposed to fight Gamori.
Okay.
And he was going to smash Gamori. He was going to absolutely smash him, which is why Gomez is also going to smash him probably. But now he's fighting Lopulis, and Lopulis is the underdog according to the price by like $700. It's crazy. So we're talking about value. There's obvious value on Lopulis, the guy that has, you know, more experience, especially UFC experience.
Yeah. Lopulis is lined correctly. And yeah. Loughran is just given an absurd number.
Mm-hmm.
So I say, Monk, this is the reverse of your players underpriced. Always the overpriced duo does not make the nuts.
Well, they've done 4 out of 6 times. It's only happened 6 times, and they have made optimal 4 of those times. But yeah, I don't. It's tough. It's a tough one. I would think that all the value's on Lopulis, but if Loughran gets a first round KO, which again, never has Lopulis been finished, so I would kind of be surprised. He would probably be, you know, put up a decent score. I'm not saying full fade, but I think this is another one you kind of have to put in your lineups, and I'll be higher on Lopulis for sure.
I think I'm going to be pretty fadey on this fight. I just don't see having much exposure at all.
That's tough with these salaries, man.
I know. We'll see how it comes down, how it comes together, but I don't see having a ton of exposure personally to that one. I don't know. Neither guy, a 9,300, I mean, for the underdog, I'm just not paying it.
No.
I'm not paying it. I like him. I like him, but I'm not paying it. It's weird. It's a weird one. I think both guys are maybe a little probably better than what they should be in this kind of a fight. I don't know how else to put it. Flipping the script to a fight that I do think has some GPP appeal, we've got Ang Lusa taking on Skeletor. Reese McKee. I like that guy. I love the nickname from my He-Man watching days back in the day.
Yep.
So be a big He-Man guy. All right, so the order just fucked me up, but Ang Lusa is the minus 155 favorite in this one with the comeback on Skeletor, minus plus 135. But the big number here, wait a minute. Fight ends inside the distance, minus 110.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I'm shocked. Why did I think this was minus 400?
Oh, God.
Yeah, I thought this was a big finish prop fight, and it's not. So now I'm a little bit baffled by that one. But I'm a little surprised there, actually. So Ang Lusa is a big hitter. Reese McKee's all skinny. Kind of figured this would have a pretty high inside the distance prop. Just based on that. But how do you see this one going down, Monk?
Yeah, I don't know. I like Lusa. Lusa has the better numbers. You kind of have to throw a couple of these fights out. I mean, he smashed Fletcher. Actually, you don't have to throw that one out. Unanimous decision, 124 points is what Lusa put up in that one. Before that, he took his debut loss to Munir Lazez, but he did score 36 points in a decision loss. You know, it's not the worst score ever. Not the highest in those decisions, but a decent number for sure. Reese McKee, you kind of got to throw his out. I mean, he got screwed over in his debut fight. They're like, hey, you're here, fight this guy, Khamzat Chimaev, real quick. He scored 0 points in that fight over 3 minutes, just got dominated. Alex Morono, after that, he landed 8.27 strikes a minute in that fight, and he got hit with almost 12 strikes a minute from Alex Morono. So he did score 52 in that fight in that loss, but this dude is just going to walk forward and take damage, then I'm putting my money on Angelusa. I mean, I'm not fading Reese McKee. I think he has a path to victory here, but I'm probably picking Angelusa in this one. I mean, how are you going to get 12 strikes a minute landed on you from Alex Morono? So yeah, give me Angelusa. I don't want to pay 8,800, but I think we're definitely paying from that Fletcher victory in which he scored 124. So we are paying for that, but I think he has a potential to score well for sure, even in a decision.
Anjos has really solid volume. That loss to Jack Della Madonna, are we going to hold that against him? I'm not going to hold that one against him too much. As a matter of fact, I'm almost giving him props for surviving three rounds against JDM.
Right.
You know, losing to Muneer. Yeah.
Not great, but Muneer sucks to fight. He makes for awful fights.
Yeah. I mean, that's concerning, but the volume is there. The volume has been there for Anj. And honestly, I don't think that Reese McKee is going to be able to hold up to 120 strikes. That's why I'm so surprised at the inside the distance prop. I feel like I want to bet this fight to finish inside the distance. Just a little surprised there. I don't think McKee has a lot of finishing power, but Anj should. Although, again, hasn't shown it in his last few fights because he's been fighting guys who were pretty good or that he's been losing to. So I think when you see him sort of up against the more scrubby guys, he's finishing them. But it just hasn't happened in these last few fights for him. So, Angelusa also has the takedown upside, where Reese McKee, when he's been taken down, he goes down pretty easy. Again, haven't seen a ton of it. But when somebody does try to take Reese McKee down, they've been able to without too much trouble. He was taken down three times by Morono. Chimaev only needed the one takedown. But the Morono takedowns are more concerning because Morono is not a takedown guy. You know, he doesn't even always go for takedowns in his fights at all. He rarely goes for them. He's not a takedown guy, and he had no problem taking down McKee. So that seems to be the best path for Anj. I think you play a little bit of both sides of this fight, though, on DraftKings, because the volume is really good. And if McKee does win, it's probably like landing 120 strikes.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. Zara Fearn taking on Jacqueline Cavalcante. Cavalcante is the favorite in this one.
Did we skip one?
I'm in order on this screen. Or I had to go back.
They're wrong. Okay.
Yeah, something was off on
either technology. Next fight is Edwards and Cornole.
Yeah, they're all mixed up. So I'm trying to, before I was following Tapology, now I'm jumping back over to Fight Odds to follow their order, but I don't know. So Zara Fearn, Jacqueline Cavalcante. Cavalcante, a minus 350 favorite. The comeback on Fearn, plus 285. Fearn, unknown age. All we know is she's kind of old. I'm seeing different reports. How old is this woman?
I'm going with 39. 40,
could be 36.
Could be 40.
Could be 45. I don't know. Fight goes the distance. Fight ends inside the distance. Even odds at minus 115. Let's take a look at the stats for these two ladies. Let's see. Where are we? Yeah. Where? Zara Fearn. Yeah, here we go. So we don't have anything for Cavalcante at the moment on the stat screen, so you'll tell me a little bit of that. But Fearn, no takedowns, no wins. Decent strike volume and poor takedown defense. So Fearn 6-5, Monk. Massive underdog. Old school. No grappling. Gets taken down. She's done. She might be the better striker here, but I don't think it matters. I think she'll get taken down. Cavalcante has plenty of grappling in the repertoire. I think she takes her down and either pounds out a high-scoring grappling-based decision or finds a submission along the way. How do you see it going?
Yeah, all you had to say was Cavalcante and grappling, and I'm immediately putting Cavalcante in a ton of lineups. I like her for cash. I like her for GPPs. Yeah, Zara Fearn might be 6-5 as a pro, but she's 0-3 in the UFC. And one of those losses, she got out-grappled big time by Felicia freaking Spencer, Lost to Josiane Nunez, who's like 5 feet tall. I mean, just absolutely ridiculous losses here. Hasn't looked good. I see no stats that I even remotely like for DraftKings. Maybe her at distance pacing, because she's outscoring her opponents by 0.8 points a minute. Other than that, there's nothing that I... She controls 6% of all grappling time she is involved in. Give me Jacqueline Cavalcanti. I got no stats for her, but I don't think I need... I mean, she's 26 going against an almost 40-year-old. So, yeah, give me Cavalcanti here.
And she does grapple.
And she does grapple.
Yeah, she has takedowns. She has top control. She has a mount. She has finishes via strikes. But on the flip side, Cavalcanti fighting in weird women's MMA things that exist in Europe and places that aren't America or Brazil, where you literally have no idea who the hell she's fighting.
Well, where was Zara Farron fighting before the UFC?
I don't know, but she did fight in the UFC for a minute, took losses, but it wasn't good before the
all losses.
Ladies Fight Night 7.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. That's who she's beating.
Yeah. She's actually taken losses to 1-0 Sinead Kavanaugh. So, you know, let's be fair about it. It's not like, Let's be fair. Where is she from? France. Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
Where's Cavalcanti from?
Portugal?
Not no, Brazil. She's actual Brazil. Not Portugal.
She fights out of Portugal. Well, she has a Portugal flag on her shoulder in that picture, so.
I mean, it says she's born in Brazil, but that could be wrong on Tapology.
And I mean, yeah, Tapology has her born in Brazil and a flag of Portugal right next to her name. What are you doing, Tapology?
What the fuck is going on here? How wrong? Tapology's like, listen, these French fighters, we don't know what's up. I mean, this is just, where was she born? I think she was born in Portugal, not France.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. I think Tapology is wrong, which makes it less good, but it makes it more of a fair fight for the French fighter. Like, if she's from Brazil, even your average Brazilian off the street knows enough BJJ to beat Zara Farron. Just like you pull cop, a lady cop from Brazil off the street. She's like, oh, no, I know BJJ. I'll be able to take this
girl. Yeah, there's probably an incoming armbar here.
Yeah. All right, let's move on here. Next up, we've got... Just want to make sure I'm not skipping fights. Nora Cornole, who actually fought Jacqueline Cavalcanti at one point. Mm-hmm. She's taken on Jocelyn Edwards, with Edwards a slight minus 122 favorite. Fight goes the distance, sitting at plus 145 on this one. Minus 145 to go the distance. So certainly leaning to a decision here. Let's go to Nora's Tapology. Man, you know, it's just more of these fighters who have fought nobodies. She takes the loss to Cavalcanti. But then 0-0, 12-10, 1-0, 2-0, just nothing. She's fighting nothing. Now, I'm not a big Jocelyn Edwards fan, but she's fought in the UFC and she's won against real opponents. This, to me, is a pretty easy situation. I don't love the scoring potential of a Jocelyn Edwards, but, you know, I think she should win this fight.
Yeah, I agree. I like Edwards to win, but this is probably the one fight I'm fading this week overall for DraftKings. It's just, I don't think that Cornole wins, and I think Edwards does, and Edwards has never put up a triple-digit score. In fact, less than 81 points on average per win. I mean, she controls 14% grappling time. Average value per win is less than 10. And she has a terrible strength of schedule. Also, she should have freaking lost that fight against Lucy Pudilova. That was a robbery if I've ever seen one. So really, if you count that, her only two wins out of her last five is Ji Young Kim and Ramona Pascual. So this is a terrible fight. Very low-level women's MMA. I guess I'm picking Edwards to win because of the UFC experience, but she has no grappling. I mean, if Cornell can grapple at all, this could easily be an upset. So I guess I'm fading it overall. I'll have more Cornell than I will Edwards, though, because Edwards is, she just hates scoring points. And and you have to pay almost $400 over her average salary to roster her. Why would you do that?
Jocelyn only land strikes. There's no takedown in her game at all. Even if she land, and she doesn't have
to Jessica Rose Clark, guys.
That's a horrible loss. That's like losing to modern day Paige VanZant.
Yeah.
It's the same loss. It's like, what? You lost to Paige? That's the same kind of loss. You cannot lose to Jesse Jess. I'm sorry. That is just an unacceptable.
I love Jesse Jess, but yeah.
I love her personality. I enjoy her on Twitter. I subscribe to her OnlyFans. I support her lifestyle.
There you go.
But as far as like a fighter, not so much. I support a lot of the fighters that way. I just, you know, out of kindness.
It's good. I mean, you got to, you know, they don't get paid very well from the UFC. No. That's the word on the street.
Yeah.
We do what we can.
Absolutely. All right. Final fight. Now, this fight I like. Why is this here? Okay, this should be on the main card. This one doesn't baffle me.
Certainly be up the roster for sure.
I don't know if Fight Odds has the order correct or what's going on. This is probably the fourth best fight on this card, maybe the third best. But here it is, showing as the opener. And that's Fareed Basharat taking on Cletson Rodriguez. Fareed at minus 360, coming back at plus 295 on Cletson. You know, you got to play I'm not sure this is the underdog spot, but, you know, fight ends inside the distance, plus 130. So this one is leaning fight goes to decision. Now, with that being said, Monk, my boy Fareed is a DraftKings special style fighter, averaging 3 takedowns per 15 minutes, lots of grappling, lots of volume, no losses so far for this kid. And he's taken on a Cletson Rodriguez, a K-Rod, who gets taken down a lot. What else to put it? He was absolutely taken down and controlled by CJ Vergara in that fight.
I don't think he hasn't been taken down yet in the UFC, but he has been out controlled in the CJ Vergara fight.
Santo Curatolo took him down a couple times in his contender series fin. Oh, he winds up beating. He went for the takedowns. Now, all right, let's throw away the win against Shannon Ross. And now I screwed up who I thought Cletson had fought. And
yeah, if you throw out the Shannon Ross win, he actually outscored CJ Vergara before you get the bonus points. He scored 60 points in that loss. And he got the loss. He actually
won that fight. If you look at how the fight went down,
yeah,
he should have won that fight. Mm-hmm. It was CJ Vergara who was controlled by TR. I cannot. You know, I researched this fight for the TR, like a CJ Vergara. I can't remember anymore. It's all blending together for me right now. But what we do know here, listen, you got to throw away the win against Shannon Ross. Shannon Ross is garbage. Cletson probably beat Vergara in that fight. And so now he's taking on Fareed Basharat, who is a takedown machine, who beat a very good Damon Blackshear recently. This is a good fight. It's good on paper. And I actually think that Cletson, man, it's hard to say he's live in this fight because there's so many other underdogs that are like plus 130, plus 140. Like, why bother playing the plus 295 underdog on a card with so many close fights? And that's the thing that's messing with me. But generally, I think Cletson's a pretty good fighter. And so I'm trying to find that fight again. Yeah, they keep hiding it. Here we go. So I think Cletson's a pretty good fighter as well, but the numbers, everything says this is a Fareed Basharat spot, minus 290, heavy favorite. He is a grappler. He wants to go for takedowns. And again, Cletson, although he wasn't taken down by Vergara, like I recalled incorrectly, he certainly was taken down a few times in his contender series win.
Yeah, for sure. The only problem I have with Basharat, he did do all that against a very good opponent in Blackshear, and he only scored 81 points. 3 takedowns, all kinds of control time, all kinds of volume, supposedly. 81 points, and he was $9,100 that week. So I don't know. I don't even know what to think about that, to be honest. Also, people say that he is the lesser of the two Bash brothers. So I'm not saying I say that, but people do say that. Gledson, yeah, like I said, 60 points against Vergara. He, you know, 4 points a minute in that fight against Vergara, while Bacharat scored only less than 3.5 per minute against Blackshear. I mean, I'm probably going to pick Bacharat, but I mean, I guess Rodriguez did get taken down in the DWCS, and I probably favor Bacharat to get a few takedowns, but I don't know if I'm going to be going crazy on Bacharat here at 9,200. If this goes to decision, I mean, he could easily score 80, 85, 90 points and come nowhere close to paying off that salary. He could also finish Rodriguez or dominate him on the ground and score 120. I have no idea. We have one fight to go on for this guy, so I'm going to tread carefully, but I will probably have more of the field for Gledson Rodriguez just because he's so cheap and because of what he his volume, man. I mean, 4.79 points a minute in his UFC career so far. I love to see that. I mean, say what you will about Ross, he didn't pick that opponent, and he did exactly what you're supposed to do against guys that shouldn't even be in the UFC, and he smashed him in a minute and scored 131 points. That means he scored 16 points in 58 seconds if you take out the 115 bonus. 16 points in 58 seconds? Yeah, at 7K, give me I'll probably have more Rodriguez than Bacharat when it comes to DK this week.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I mean, I'm glad that you went there because Gledson seems like an underdog playable guy, except this card is so weird. And so as we
come to the up, card, you're paying up for the Bacharat name just yeah. because his brother is so good.
it's just a weird top. I mean, look at the top. I sorted this by salary, right? And if you look at the screen, you'll see what I'm talking about here. You know,
yeah, it's Cavalcanti or no one.
Or, you know, Loughran is a no. Bacharat is a meh. You know,
Charriere is good for cash, but not GPPs.
Yeah, Manon, I guess, but like, is she going to destroy? Only if Thug just shows up and not giving a shit, right? I don't see Manon just destroying Thug Rose. I don't see it. I don't see it. Ange Luce, like I said, I like him. I like the spot for him, but am I selling out to? And we're already at 8,800. It's a weird
mid range is the money spot this week for sure.
Yeah, it's a weird card. You know, Cyril Gane, Volkan.
Underdogs all suck. The favorites all don't score well. So get yourself in the mid range is my advice.
You're telling me I got to play Willie Gomez at his low volume. I don't know if I want to do that, but like, you know, it's a strange one. It is absolutely a strange card. This is one of probably the weirder on paper cards I've ever seen. You've got Rose, who's like plus 140. Wait, let's get the number on Rose. Rose is plus 170. Right next to Gledson, who's plus 295. Like,
yeah,
right next to each other. It's just a weird thing here going on with this card in general and the way the salaries and just the fighters on it. I don't think that loading up on these high dollar guys is going to absolutely lock you into big scores.
I agree 100%. I agree.
Very
the
bizarre.
Top end is, looks really bad, and maybe we're wrong. That's, of course, a possibility. We're just speculating based on what we've seen in stats. But the top end, I mean, how could you trust that? We've got two brand new – go back up if you could. We've got two brand – I mean, Cavalcanti, six fights total. Loughran, no UFC fights. Charriere, no UFC fights. You know, Alusa, like two UFC – you know what I mean? Lopulis hasn't fought in the UFC in like 5 years. So, like – It's a crapshoot this week,
and
man.
Didn't score well when he did fight in the UFC. Yep. So yeah, yep. It's a weird one. You know, save your money. It's in France.
Yep.
It's a card. Let's have fun. It's fights. We're gonna play it. We're gonna enjoy it. But I don't know.
Careful.
I don't know how I'm approaching this one yet. As far as like how much I want to invest in this particular card. Yep. With all that being said, it is time for the kill shot, Monk. So. Who do you like? Who do you like for a kill shot here? I'm gonna open up the whole field for kill shots.
Oh well, I'm not gonna cop out. I think there. If you,
I was
don't,
gonna I allow just, you to go Spivak if you felt like you wanted to.
I mean,
wuss out on your kill shot.
Yeah, exactly. Spivak would be my choice if I wanted to be a wuss. I do not want to be a wuss. So I was not counting that fight. I think there's really two options for me, and one is a lot safer than the other. I'll give you the safe one, and then depending on what you say, I'll throw out the other name. Thiago Moises. You know what I mean? Like 7,700. This guy's a UFC vet, a vet, you know what I mean? And he's only 28, or he's not even 30 years old, I don't think. Has good grappling. 7,700 is a great underdog salary to play. Makes the optimal lineup a bunch more than the salaries around it when it does win. And Saint-Denis, I love Saint-Denis. I'm probably picking him to win, but he's only got three UFC fights, and they're against next to nobodies for the most part. Moise is the much better competition. So I'll take, I'll be just kind of a wuss instead of a whole wuss, and I'll take Thiago Moise. I think that's a safe kill shot this week.
That's fair. And you know, it's unfortunate to take a kill shot that you probably don't even think is going to win, but it is what it is.
I don't like hardly any dogs this week, man.
I don't love these dogs either. I'm going to go with Thug Rose as my kill shot with a caveat here. I don't know that Thug is going to show up as the badass who was putting it on Zhang Weili, or the one who just comes out and just doesn't look herself at other times in other fights. So I don't know which version we're going to get. And for that reason, I'm just going to take my underdog shot. I love the one who came out against Carla Esparza.
Yikes. Even she said that was probably one of the worst fights in UFC history.
It's hard to watch it, too.
I mean, but the two wins over Weili, the Andrade win, the two wins over Joanna, like, what are we going to get, man? I'm with you. I'm rooting for her, but...
And by the way, this is the girl who went to split, and I know it was a long time ago. She went to split against Carolina. Back when Kavalkevich was the shit, like, this wasn't, you know, in 2016 version of Carolina, where she was just a bad bitch. So I don't know. I'm gonna go with Thug here as my kill shot. I was thinking about going with Skeletor.
That was my risky dog. That was the other
one. But I'm gonna go with Rose because I want to see vintage Rose. And the other one I do want to throw in, I'm gonna repeat what I said earlier, and it's unfortunate, but Bogdan, as much as I think he's the fraud of the card,
looks like an off-brand Anthony Smith. Yes or no?
Yes, he does. You know, he's the thug. You know, he's not the thug. He's the sort of fraud of the card. But if he wins, he is in the nuts lineup. So you must have exposure to that fight. That fight is my kill shot fight.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's wrap it up. Good stuff for Monk. For Geek, guys, hit the like button. Make sure you subscribe to the channel. We got non-stop DFS content hitting. NFL season is now. First look lineups out. All kinds of great stuff.
Heating up.
Yeah, it is happening. So make sure you're checking that out. And we will see you guys at the top of the leaderboards. Take care.